Thank you for listening to Culture and Agriculture. My name is Tate Cronin with the University of Tennessee Institute of Agriculture, and today we are sitting down with Kim Brown, turfgrass and pesticide extension specialist with the UT Department of Plant Sciences, here to discuss some tips for fire ant control in West Tennessee. Kim, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Tate?
I'm doing great today. So what do you have for us?
You know, when we talked about doing this podcast, I was trying to think about what the best thing to talk about. Well, riding around through West Tennessee, I've only been in West Tennessee for about a year and a half, and I moved up here from Louisiana, and I grew up in Georgia and went to school at Auburn University. So, like, I've grown up in the fire ant realm, and since I moved here, I've noticed an increase in fire ant mounds. And so I thought that would be a great topic to talk about, because we need to start controlling some of these mounds, because they're getting into some precarious areas, getting in areas where they're closer to humans or more traffic areas, and fire ant stings can be a problem, especially to those that may have anaphylaxis or could be allergic to fire ant bites or stings, excuse me. So I thought that'd be a great topic to talk about.
Absolutely. I think everyone in Tennessee has experienced a fire ant sting at one point or another. And it always just begs the question, how do you best get rid of them? Because I know there's a lot of home remedy techniques. They don't always work. So what is the best way to get rid of a mound?
Right. Well, let me kind of touch on some of these home remedies first. One thing, I don't really recommend a lot of home remedies because mainly they're not really successful. A lot of people talk about the fact that fire ant mounds just move. And they do, right? So they get mad and they pack their little bags and they can move a few feet away or even a little bit further than that. So if you run over them with a truck or you step on them repeatedly or if you mow them, or let's say you use boiling water, you know, that's one thing that a lot of people like to use. That's not really a successful treatment because you're not going to get deep into the mound. These mounds go really deep into the ground. And when you see a little mound on top of the ground, they've been there for a month or so. And so they're actually a lot deeper than you think, especially as it gets hotter. These ants are going to move deeper where it's cooler. Think about you. If it's uncomfortable for you outside, it's going to be uncomfortable for the ants. So they don't like to be in really hot areas. So they will get deep. And when you use like treatments like boiling water, you're not going to get to the entire mound. And you're not going to kill the queen or the brood, which is the baby fire ants, right? And so I don't really recommend that as a great treatment option. Now, if we're going to talk about fire ant treatment, and I want to talk a little bit more about the biology in just a minute, but let's talk a little bit more about treatment. What I recommend is a good fire ant bait. So you can go to Lowe's, Home Depot, wherever, and buy a good fire ant bait, like Amdro, Extinguish, Extreme. These are all fire ant baits that work really well. And what happens is with a bait, so you've got a grit granular that's got an insecticide on it as well as an oil attractant. So if you ever open up a bag of fire ant bait, it's kind of got a sweet smell because it's got an oil attractant on it. And that oil attractant is what the ants come to. And so they'll pick that bait up and they'll take it back to their mound and they'll feed it to the brood. And a lot of these baits have a insect growth regulator in it. So it stops that brood from being able to procreate. And so you'll kill the mound from the inside out. You'll kill the queen, you'll kill that brood, and the mound will die. So some of our fire ant baits, you need to realize they're slow acting because they are insect growth regulators. They can take anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks to work. Now, we do have some that have a quicker knockdown. So those different active ingredients can have like a 3-day knockdown. That's things that you want to kind of think about whenever you are selecting a fire ant bait. And typically what I recommend doing, if you've got a lot of mounds in an area, is I would do a broadcast treatment, right? So do your entire yard. And what you do with that is you can get one of those Scott's handheld spreaders, set it on setting 2, walk as fast as you can, and kind of skip a swath is really one of the best ways to go. Because when we talk about using baits, you're not using a whole lot. And it's another reason why I recommend fire ant baits, is because you don't have to use a lot. So there's not a lot of insecticide that you're putting out, and it's a very product specific or insect specific product. And so when we talk about that, we're only using like 1 to 2 pounds per acre of bait. And that's really less than a half ounce per 1,000 square feet. So a very, very, very small amount that you're putting out in a broadcast area. Now, with fire ant baits, you can also mound treat. So you would just put a little bit around the edge of a mound. You don't want to put it directly on top. You put it around the edge of a mound, and you do really good treatments. And that's what I really recommend.
Are they safe if you have children or pets? Are they going to be harmful if you broadcast and applicate across the yard? Is it going to be okay to let, you know, your kid or your dog play in the backyard after that?
That's a great question. And yes, I do think that it's you would want to read the label, number one. Make sure you read and understand label specifications. But this is something that when we were in Louisiana and Georgia and Alabama, further south where more fire ants are more readily available, we strongly recommend using fire ant baits on school grounds all the time because they are extremely safe, quote unquote. You know, I don't like saying that about pesticides in general, but they are very, very low toxicity, especially when used based on label specifications. And that's why we recommend using them, because you can let your dog go play there. You can let your kids play in the yard right after treatment. And so that's why it's such a great product to utilize in these areas, because you get really good control and very low toxicity.
Are there any other things we need to know about applying fire ant bait? What are some other tips?
Sure. There are a couple things. Number one, let me reiterate the fact that you, when using any pesticide, you want to make sure that you read and follow label directions. Okay. One of the things to know about fire ant baits, you want to do, when you use fire ant baits, you want to use kind of in the spring and in the fall. So a lot of times you can get away with just one application a summer, or spring really. And this spring was really difficult because it was such a cool spring. And so the fire ants weren't foraging. Okay. The big thing about using fire ant baits is it's something that they're attracted to. It's a bait, so that you want them to be foraging, going in, finding food and stuff, so they'll pick it up and take it back to the mound. And so the easy way to know if fire ants are foraging is if you throw like a hot dog or a potato chip down on the ground, they'll jump on it. If they're on it within 30 minutes, they're out foraging and they will pick up those baits. Other best management practices for utilizing fire ant baits is you want to make sure that there's no dew on the ground. So I tend to find, you know, if you do it after the dew dries, so afternoon is a better time to put those baits out, but you want to make sure you're not going to get any rainfall. So it needs to be dry. The grass needs to be dry when you're doing a fire ant application, because the ants have a really hard time picking it up if it gets wet. So that's just a couple things that I like to remind folks. Again, if you're going to put a fire ant bait, we're putting such a small amount out that you want to, you know, I'm going to go back to that Scott's handheld spreader. If you're going to walk it on a small yard, set it on setting 2, walk as fast as you can and do big skip swaths. So don't go right back on top of where you've already spread. So you want to, because they're going to forage out and find it.
Kim, tell us a little bit about the biology of the fire ant. So what are kind of these opponents we're dealing with in our yards? Tell us a little bit about them.
Right. Okay. So just a little history on fire ants. Imported fire ants are what we're really talking about, right? So we have native fire ants and then there's imported fire ants. And that's what we typically think about, are the imported fire ants, the ones that are moving from the south and coming in. So imported fire ants originated in South America, and they came in through the Port of Mobile many, many years ago, and they've just kind of migrated through the south since then. And so the reason I'm fairly knowledgeable in fire ants is because I worked in the fire ant management lab when I was at Auburn University many moons ago, back before I spent some time at LSU and then moved up here to Tennessee. And so fire ants came in through the Port of Mobile in Alabama and have kind of since spread. And so the interesting thing about fire ant, they build a mound in the ground, and the way we can tell the difference between native fire ants and imported fire ants is imported fire ants have different size worker ants. You have small, medium, and large ants. And so all of our native fire ants are all the same size. So if you ever look at them, they're all the same size. And then also their mounds are pretty unique. And so when you see an imported fire ant mound, they'll just kind of mound up, and they can get taller based on the soil type can really change how tall they get. Also the temperature So if it's cooler, they'll have a little bit, be more on top. So they'll move the brood to the top of the ground so that the brood can stay warm. So they'll have, they have a complete life cycle. So they'll lay an egg and they'll pupate, just kind of like a caterpillar or a butterfly. And so they'll do that. And that's, they'll move the brood based on the temperature outside and that kind of thing. So really interesting. And they have one queen for, because they're a social colony. So they'll have one queen in a mound for the monogyne. So there's two different types. We'll get into that detail today. Get a little bit too detailed, right? So the monogyne has one queen and she'll lay all the eggs. And what happens is after a rainfall, what they'll do is they'll move all that brood to the top, and then the male and female will fly way up into the air and they'll mate up in the air, and then the queen will fall back down. And wherever she lands is where she'll start a new mound, okay? So that's why you typically see more pop up after a rainstorm, because they're moving that brood to the top so they can reproduce. The other cool thing about fire ants is the way they survive the rainy season is they will create a raft and they'll float on top of the water. And so they're able to survive like floods and stuff. And we'd have that happen a lot when we were in Louisiana, is they would, when we have a lot of floody seasons, they would float on top of the water and they would move to different areas. So during hurricane season, that's one thing that you don't want to deal with is floating fire ants, right? So that's worse than a bunch of alligators and snakes is fire ants. But anyways, I digress. So that's kind of how they reproduce. So they're really interesting critters, right? And so if you understand their biology, it helps you get a little bit more control over them in your yard. So the other cool thing about fire ants is when you get that one queen lands in an area, if there's another mound close to it, that mound will go kill that queen so that they don't take away from the foraging in that particular area. So what I have always told folks too, if you don't want to do a whole lot of treatment, but you want, you've got one fire ant mound already in your yard, leave that fire ant mound, and that mound will help kill some of the other mounds. Now, it's not a huge control, but it is a little bit of a biological control that we do have, because they are the monogyne that only has one queen per mound. Is very territorial, and they'll kill other fire ants that are in their area. So they can be very predacious, and they can eat other insects and stuff, and you'll see that with fire ants. So the other thing to keep in mind is, like, fire ants do like to eat, like, aphids, and they're very attracted to the honeydew that you'll get. So if you plant plants too close to your house, people wonder how you get fire ants in your house. Well, if you have a crepe myrtle or something that produces a lot of honeydew, and if it touches the house, fire ants can come in through those areas. You'll also notice fire ants kind of on the edge of different places, like on fence rows or something like that, areas that don't get disturbed a whole lot. So it's where you'll typically see a lot of your fire ant mounds. Now you'll start seeing them out in pastures and stuff, and they can get to be a problem. That's a lot of times why we recommend using something like a fire ant bait to control, because fire ants are becoming a lot more prevalent in Tennessee. And so it is something that we do want to be aware of.
Thank you so much, Kim, for sitting down with us, and thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.